Well, good evening and welcome back to the Journey Home program. I'm your host, Jean-Marc Grodi, here in EWTN. And once again, we have the great privilege to come together to hear a story of faith and conversion. We're joined tonight by Keith and Tammy Kaiser. They're former Presbyterians, and later on in the show, we're going to hear about some of their ministries, the sjcatholicschool.org, Heart Ridge Ministries, the Retreat Center, as well as their podcast. Heartlines podcast. Yes. We'll hear all about that later. But they came into the church back in 1991, and really honored to hear their story tonight. So Keith and Tammy, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much.
We've actually been connected for a long time through the Coming Home Network over the years, but we're just now finally getting you out here to tell your story. So it's just an honor to have you here.
Yeah, it's an honor to be here. Thank you.
Well, thanks for doing it. So it's always trying to bounce the narrative back and forth is always tricky with a couple. We decided we'd start with you, Keith. Where does your story begin?
Oh, yeah. I think my story begins with my grandmothers. Okay. I had two grandmothers, both sides of the family, that taught me about Jesus. And the thing that I remember is just how much they said, Jesus loved me, right? Yeah. And that sticks with me. I'm 60 years old now. And but I grew up in a Presbyterian family that was, I would say, nominally Presbyterian. You know, I have memories of going to church. And my parents divorced when I was 10 years old, somewhere around there. And they both remarried. My mom remarried and moved us to a town 30 minutes away. And so I was a lonely fifth grader, unsure of what life was going to look like then. Moved into middle school, and a woman knocked on her door who happened to be the youth minister of the Presbyterian Church. She lived across the circle from us. Her name was Kathy Hildebrand. And she invited my sister and me to go on a church retreat, which we did. I don't know why we did, but we did. And that got me started in youth ministry at the church. And very quickly, that faith became the center of my life, you know, from that little diminutive woman knocking on our door. It's amazing, actually.
Well, those simple things, right? Jesus loves you. Come join us on a retreat. Journeys start like them.
Yeah.
What about you, Tammy? What's your...
Well, and what's funny, so he moved into my town when he was in fifth grade, but I grew up there. And our Presbyterian church was across the street from the Presbyterian church that he was going to. And, you know, my family's sort of the same. My father never went to church, but my mom was pretty faithful. But I remember as a child, I had such a religious sense. I desired so much to know Jesus Christ from as young as I can remember. I remember, and I was pretty precocious. I was one of those girls. And I remember even in sixth grade that I was determined to read through the entire Bible as a sixth grader. Uh-huh. So I did, and I had some pretty great Sunday school teachers. You know, I went every Sunday, loved Sunday school. So I just really loved my faith. So we were correspondingly sort of on this journey together.
Right.
And then in high school, we started dating.
Yeah.
And we can sort of pick up our story from there with we started attending Young Life.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, Young Life played a big role. And again, it was people. Right. It was Keith Emerson and other Young Life leaders. I still remember them, still think fondly of them. Showing up at our high school, inviting us to club nights. And then we got involved with that. We got involved with campaigners. We ended up going on their summer camp things. And again, this just became our life.
Right. Yeah. Now, both of you growing up Presbyterian, but in different churches, what did worship look like? You know, what did the Sunday service look like for you guys growing up?
They were both mainline Presbyterian churches, too, which is interesting.
Right.
In the same town.
Yeah, okay.
In the same small town. And that was just sort of funny about it. Pretty much the same.
Yeah, pretty traditional.
Preaching, Bible teaching.
Sunday school.
Yeah.
Youth group.
Yeah.
All of that. Church was our life in high school.
It was. Sure. And then when we got involved in Young Life, we had those experiences, especially at the retreats and at these Young Life camps where you just really, you know, you give your life over to God. And they're very spiritual, emotional, a lot of crying and tears. And we both decided at that point, you know. And I remember in high school, you know, we were those high school students that we demanded that we could have a Bible study in the public high school, you know, that kind of thing. We were leading those campaigns, and we would say, we're going to convert this whole high school for Christ. We just had this really...
By loving the lunch ladies.
Right. Yeah, by loving the lunch ladies.
Evangelical spirit.
We did. And honestly, we took a lot of pride in that we had people in our young life who we rescued out of the Catholic Church. We would say that.
Up to this point in your life, you know, how did you think about, you know, Presbyterianism versus other Christian denominations and Catholicism? Where did those fit in your worldview?
Oh, I mean, for me, I was going to be a minister.
Okay.
I knew that, thought that in high school, that or a college professor.
Okay.
And we had Catholic friends, and they found faith in Young Life.
Okay.
They didn't find it in the parish. Okay. And, you know, the parish, the priest in the parish had a reputation of having a drinking problem and
chain smoker.
And so it probably we didn't see it fairly right at that time, but it wasn't great.
It wasn't great. We didn't view them as Christians, you know.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So with a very limited understanding,
right.
And and then when we were juniors in high school, a man came to town and knocked on our door again, but actually knocked on Kathy Hildebrand's door and said...
That was the youth minister.
The youth minister, and said, I'm looking for some people that want to go deeper and do Bible studies, right? And so this person was Scott Hahn, right, who was not Catholic at the
time. Wait a minute, he knocked on her door.
I mean, he went to her...
Looking for young disciples,
looking for some people.
Okay.
Yeah. What we didn't know at the time was he had come back to Grove City to hide so that he could study Catholicism.
I don't think it was even mentioned that he was a former pastor. Like, this was before the famous tape of, you know.
Sure. Yeah, we didn't know.
So this was during
Catholic.
His interim, but he had to figure himself out.
Yeah. So, so we ended up spending just hours and hours with Scott and Kimberly and I had two best friends, and I mean, we had a friend group, this Christian friend group. Mm-hmm. And you know, after basketball practice, we would meet at Perkins Restaurant, and Scott would have his Bible, his tattered Bible that had everything highlighted in it, and he would just teach us this covenant theology. And
as high school students,
and we just fell in love with it.
Yeah.
In fact, we fell so much in love with it that we stole his Bible at one point and Xeroxed the whole thing. So we have it in a binder right now.
And then we continued on to go to college in that same town where we went to high school.
Okay.
So, and Scott and Kimberly were also the campus ministers at this smaller Presbyterian church.
Orthodox Presbyterian.
Yeah, so it was Orthodox Presbyterian church. So we made that journey from the mainline Presbyterian church, which had a lot of, you know, that's really when a lot of their upheaval had started.
Okay.
You know, women, pastors, that kind of thing. And we were seeing that there was some, and being pro-choice as well. Mm-hmm. So we jumped to the Orthodox
And there were
Presbyterian
a lot of very
church.
Kind hospitable people there.
We met a lot of wonderful people there.
And they just took us in.
Sure.
Yeah, so we were this young college couple. We're still dating. Scott and Kimberly are being a good model for us as well. They're inviting us into their home. They have two little boys at this time. And
in a home that every wall was lined with books.
Yeah, because they're not making hardly any money at this point. So they have the smallest house that they're renting, and the whole house is
desk
lined
like
with
this,
books
just stacked.
And they're lending us all kinds of books about marriage and dating. So they really were our marriage mentors at that time.
It's wonderful.
And we decided to get married as juniors
in college.
Okay. What were you studying at that point?
I was studying theology.
He was
going to be a pastor, and I was just studying education.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you were at that time you were moving towards marriage then.
Yeah, we
for
were.
Sure.
Okay.
For sure. For
yeah.
sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, what happened next?
Well, what happened was
the year before we got married. We were engaged, but whatever.
Yeah, so after our sophomore year of college.
We could mention, I'm sure you have couples that do this.
Yeah, we'll fill in the blanks here.
But that's just real quickly, that summer, We spent the summer in Cincinnati working at a Presbyterian church, which was Kimberly Hahn's father's church at the time. But they hire college students, they train them, and we work for their church over the summer doing their youth programs. So we had this wonderful experience where we got to work with the Hahns, and just another really nice experience in the Presbyterian church.
Right. Yeah.
But then after, and then and at that point, we said, yeah, we're going
to
get married as soon as we can.
We decided to get married that summer.
Gotcha.
Right.
Okay.
But it was that summer that Scott moved to Marquette, moved to Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. And I helped move that famous library. But he was not Catholic yet. Mm-hmm. Right. So, actually, I think it might have been after our freshman year. I don't know. We're old and we can't remember. The details. Doesn't matter. Yeah. But he had not talked to us about Catholicism. Mm-hmm. He taught us theology, right? And every once in a while, he would go scary to us. You know, like this is leading somewhere that I don't know that I want to go, right? And so we had that sense, and we would joke about that. And so he ended up converting that Easter. It was the Easter of our sophomore year, is actually what it was. And the summer we spent with the Kirks was the summer after that, right? And you know, the story that we like to tell is that there were four of us in a Bible study. We were spending the Easter on a lake in Florida, and Scott calls a few days before Easter and says, I got something I need to tell you guys. Mm-hmm. And we all got on the phone. So there were four phones in the house. We all got on the phone, and he said, I'm going to become Catholic, right? And we couldn't believe it. Like, we just could not. This can't be happening, right? Our lives are all set. The other guys were studying theology, too, and economics, and I don't know. The next couple years were extremely confusing. Mm-hmm. At one point, so I decided to go to seminary after I graduated, went to seminary in Pittsburgh, Reformed Presbyterian Seminary, and was working with my best friends. They're kind of entrepreneurial, and one guy started a commodities trading business.
Right, right out of college.
Right out of college, with his father's friend's money. And it was just crazy time, and we invested some money in it that we didn't have. Lost it all in one night, too, as it happens in the commodities business.
Oh, boy.
But the most important thing that happened then was we took credit cards and got advances on money that we could send to Scott. And Scott sent us 11 boxes of books from great Catholic used bookstores in Milwaukee. And we just started reading about the faith.
Wow.
I can just see us in that office talking about the books. And one of the key moments for me was when we made a trip to a Catholic bookstore in Ohio. One of the guys bought a rosary. I could not believe he was buying the rosary. We had a fight in the car. We never fought. It was just a dramatic, fun time.
But you were getting books from him. So obviously his conversion, while it was shocking and bewildering, you knew him. You knew he loved Jesus.
Yeah.
And so there was an openness there to at least consider this and try to understand what he was doing.
There was. Okay. Yeah.
It's like kind of like, we're going to prove him wrong.
Sure.
You know, like, we've got to study this.
Yeah.
And you're still going to seminary and still deciding, okay, well, let's check off the box. Which ones? We don't want to be mainline Presbyterians, not even Orthodox Presbyterians. We're liking this liturgy a little bit. So he's like saying, okay, well, let's check off the Catholicism box.
Right.
And so we studied that. And you know, we're one of the things that that the Hahns also taught us, especially Kimberly, was this idea of natural family planning. Mm-hmm. And I know that's important in some people's, and that was important in her conversion story as well. Mm-hmm. And we had read about Humana Vitae. We were very pro-life as college students.
I led the pro-life group at the
like the president of the pro-life. We went to all
and
the
pro-life. And there were Catholics involved with that.
And just, okay, well, you know, you kind of take that back logically to contraception. And so we felt really convicted as a young married couple that, no, we're not going to use contraception.
So we started having babies.
So, of course, we're having babies. And, you know, we have money.
Yeah.
We have no money, no job because, you know, we're a religion major and he's going to seminary. Mm-hmm. So it's just a really a crazy time. And and our families, God bless them, they just thought we had gone off the deep end too.
Sure.
They weren't anti us or anything.
Yeah.
And helped us out as they could. You know, mm-hmm. we've heard other stories where families did not. So they were kind of supportive, but, you know, we were trying to do our own thing. And,
I was preaching at the time.
Okay.
So the professors at Grove City they were all Presbyterian ministers in the department I was in, and they had these little churches. And when they would be on vacation, they would invite their students to lead the service and preach. And so I was doing that, and mm-hmm. I was loving it. I enjoyed it a lot.
We were also youth ministers
at the
time.
We were youth ministers. Okay. We kind of took the Hans job at that at that church. And
they did ask us to leave when they started seeing what we
were
studying.
But as we had the opportunity to think about this, right, Scott was now out speaking, mm-hmm. right, and the famous conversion tape, right? So we, of course, got a copy of that. That all this makes sense. Because we were having children, we had to move out of the small house that we were in to get another bedroom. So the house that we moved into was owned by a theology professor at the school, and it was kind of in bad shape. So he let us fix it up. And so I was fixing it up. And while I was fixing it up, I heard Scott debate a Westminster theological professor on sola scriptura. Right? Mm-hmm. And he demolished. He won. Right. And so I became.
Had you even thought, had you thought critically about that doctrine up to this point?
Yeah. I mean, that was, I thought about it and so. Had conversations. You know, we were reading all these books. We were reading Radio Replies, some of the books we see in your shelf in here.
Yeah.
And I think we both talked and said, we need to talk, right? Because at the time I was being asked, all right, do you want to seek ordination? Right. I was in year two.
Right.
And there was a church that was thinking that maybe they wanted to, you know, place me in their church. And I couldn't.
They loved him.
I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Because I knew too much, right, I guess, at that point. Yeah. And then we started reading the church fathers. And one of the questions that I had was, was the Catholic Church Catholic from the beginning?
Right.
Right. And so we read on every topic. And we had a third story study. And one night I just came down and I said to Tammy, on every issue, right, the Eucharist, the liturgy, baptism, like all of these issues are Catholic, right? And we had a third baby
on the way,
right? Wow. Our daughter. And basically, we decided that we wanted to baptize her Catholic.
Wow. We couldn't in good conscience,
and
right?
Got down on our knees and just said, Lord, whatever you want, we're going to do it because you're calling us into a closer communion with you. And like, literally, I want you inside of me. So that's so we started meeting with a priest. Scott put us in touch with somebody in another town because, you know, when you desire the Eucharist and you're in your little Protestant town where
you're known as that young, handsome young man who's going to be the pastor.
Right.
It's a very small town.
It's a small town. Like we're in the investment office now, and we're walking over to the Catholic Church and kind of sneaking in the middle of the afternoon. It's like there's a presence here that there isn't in my church. I can't explain it, but there is, and I want that. So we started going to Mass, but we couldn't go to Mass at that church, right? Mm-hmm. Because that was the church that
people in the town knew who we were.
It was just
just so embarrassed. We just couldn't show our faces in that small town Catholic church.
Right.
It was just, and being so kind of anti-Catholic too, with the young life and everything, was just like, we can't do that.
Yeah. So we drove to a church 30 minutes away and started going to Mass.
Let's back up for a minute. I have a couple questions to ask you. One, for a lay person to become Catholic, for lay people, you know, outside of ministry, there's difficulties in terms of the intellectual journey and searching through it, right? But in particular, when you're in ministry, yeah. and even when you're considering ordination or that you've been ordained, considering becoming Catholic comes with more baggage, more difficulty. Talk a little bit about what was going through your mind as you considered all that.
Yeah, like, how am I going to support this?
Yeah, growing, baby number three, right?
Growing,
yeah.
growing family. That right. was probably question number one.
Yeah.
What was I going to give my life to? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was ordering manuals on how to become an air traffic controller, you know, which got that manual. Looking through, that would have been a disaster, you know, mm-hmm. had that been. So this is all part of the journey, because yeah. on one of these Sundays where we went to Mass at St. Mary's in Newcastle, you picked up a Pittsburgh Catholic.
Right. So Pittsburgh is a different diocese than our little town.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So if you can picture that,
diocese.
Right. Yeah. And so I grabbed, I grabbed the Pittsburgh Catholic, I read it, and I see that there's a want ad for a youth minister. And so, you know, like, yeah, we can do that. That's our experience. We grew up in youth ministry. We've been being youth ministers in this parish. And, of course, in the late 80s, early mm-hmm. 90s, the youth ministry programs mm-hmm. in Catholic churches are pretty much nil, right? They don't really exist. But these parishes, four of them got together in Pittsburgh and wanted to start a youth ministry program.
So we
applied. And you know what? They accepted us. They were excited. They liked our resume. And we weren't Catholic, too. So they're hiring us, and we're not even Catholic
yet. I remember the call with Father Paulsa. He called. I talked to him in the kitchen. And I said, yeah, but I'm Catholic in heart and mind, but I'm not there yet. We haven't converted. Yeah. We were on our way. Mm-hmm. Now, God's providence works in funny, funny ways. Mm-hmm. We don't have a job anymore, right?
We had five jobs.
I had five jobs, but we didn't have the ministry job anymore. And in the midst of that, I got selected for a federal jury duty case in Pittsburgh.
Right? Wow.
Which paid $100
a
day.
Yes, you know,
and
yes.
I was schlepping office products, and I had to go down to Pittsburgh to pick them up. So I would drive this van down. And instead of going to seminary, I went to the court case, mm-hmm. and I ended up meeting Father Paulsa during that whole thing. And by the time the trial was over, I had a job as a youth minister starting East End Catholic Youth Ministries in the Diocese of Pittsburgh.
Amazing
at the cathedral.
Yeah, right?
The center of it was at the cathedral.
And we got paid for that, mm-hmm. and the gas was paid on the van because he was delivering office products, because we were very. Very poor. I mean, you can imagine. We're our third child, and,
It was incredible.
We're going to go to break here in just a few minutes, but before, again, one more, just backing up a little bit. Again, going through that intellectual journey, receiving those boxes of books, from Scott.
Which we still have.
Right? Well, what were some of the titles that really stood out and were most significant? And then what were some of the topics that, you know, were most significant in terms of coming to this decision that... Not only is this interesting stuff, but we actually need to become Catholic. What stands out?
Oh, Catholic and Christian, Alan Schreck.
Okay, that's a great one.
That classic.
Orthodox? Why? What's that one about being Orthodox?
Yeah, there was a book
about
by
being
somebody
Orthodox.
That stopped short of becoming Catholic.
Okay.
Right, and I remember Scott
Orthodox.
Hahn used to say becoming Orthodox was like kissing your sister versus kissing your wife.
But anyway, it was influential, right?
Sure.
To help.
But,
you have a lot of hurdles.
But try to go, try to find the really historical roots of the church. I mean, I loved radio replies. Those are fun.
Well, and you mentioned the early church fathers.
Again. Yeah, the three-volume set where it's set up top, Jurgens, right?
Yeah.
Set up topical.
Okay.
That was an important one.
Right.
An important one for me.
And in all those studies, again, what were, you had mentioned that, you know, the church's moral teaching on sexuality and contraception, that was a significant one. Were there any other issues that really stand out as, you know, that really struck you as part of that?
Authority and unity for me.
I was also, kind of really into the feminist movement coming out of the 80s, really battled that a lot as a real conservative Orthodox Presbyterian, women are not seen or heard, I mean, it was just, I really felt, because I had one time wanted to be a minister too, mm-hmm. but then I became Presbyterian. You know, women are silent in church, so those kinds of things were just, I just suffered so much with that. And just,
you did.
I offered it up, Lord, I'm just going to follow. I believe your word says this, so I'm going to follow your word. So it's just really beautiful to see the Catholic treatment of women, mm-hmm. respectful of scripture, however, just that full understanding of that. Yeah. So I love that. Like, I was against, you know, women's ordination. However, look how they treat women in the Catholic Church. They're mm-hmm. still in esteem. There's Mary. Right. It was just that. That was just very beautiful and very helpful. I mean, it's just so affirming.
Sure.
And the whole thing, we're struggling with the whole contraception thing and battling that with, you know, there's small sections of Presbyterians who believe that, but mostly not. And then we're like, mm-hmm. oh, well, that is the Catholic teaching. We're like, this is, yeah. what a coincidence, you
yeah.
know.
You mentioned Mary. How did Mary and the saints strike you, the communion of saints, that Catholic
yeah,
thing?
It was a hurdle for a little bit.
Okay.
It was.
Because you're just taught.
Took a while to
yeah, you're
a
taught so much that yeah. it's not, you're not to worship these people. It's, you know, it's sure. idolatry and that statue of Mary. And there's just all that weird Catholic with the beads and the statues. And I used to hate the Sacred Heart picture. Hmm. It like bothered me, any of those. That beautiful blue-eyed Jesus with this really ugly heart. It's just like, that is just so, I hated that. Mm. But what's funny is now our ministry now, we've just really come full circle with the Sacred Heart of Jesus. We feel so, you know, committed to his heart and being in his heart and yeah. really want to spread that love.
Well, it strikes me because, again, you mentioned even before the show, and you've mentioned a couple times through that, you know, a real hallmark of your guys' story was the hospitality, the connections yeah. with people, the relationships. And, of course, you know, again, there's a little bit of ick, you know, with encountering a lot of Catholic stuff the first time. But the communion of saints and even the Sacred Heart really gets down to God in his great providence, his great fatherly providence, chooses to work through people and through relationships yeah. and through hearts, right? And so there's something to that, you know, in terms of
yeah.
the way that he speaks.
Even just
to you.
The way people took us in after we converted, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Mike Aquilina is a friend. We met
yeah.
him through the Pittsburgh Catholic. He was the editor. And he gave me little $50 jobs to do. I was yeah. not a good writer, but he made it sound good.
Yeah.
I mean, just so many. It was the community that mm-hmm. took us in and embraced us and
yeah.
loved us and, yeah, led to a new career. But maybe
sure.
that's another.
Yeah. You and again, one more little question here before the break. You mentioned authority and unity. That was an important
right.
part for you. What did you come? How did you come to see what the Catholic Church had that you needed?
Well, it helped that Pope John Paul II was Pope, right? And to, so ultimately, it was the Pope and you know, Matthew 16 and the yeah. keys to the kingdom and like I became totally convinced of that.
Yeah,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's take a little break and then we'll come back and hear the rest of the story, all that happened as a result of this journey.
Sure.
So. We'll be back in just a couple minutes, so stay tuned. We'll hear the rest of Keith and Tammy's story. If you go to chnetwork.org and you click stories there, you'll find a whole archive of stories from every possible religious or non-religious background. You're likely to find someone just like you, and so especially if you're someone on a journey, a great way to understand the faith is to see it through the eyes of someone who's coming from a similar background. So check out the archive at chnetwork.org, and we'll be back in just a couple more minutes to hear the rest of Keith and Tammy's story, so stay tuned. See you then. Welcome back to the Journey Home program. We're entering the second half of our hour tonight, speaking with Keith and Tammy Kaiser. They're former Presbyterians. They run the Heartridge Ministries, which is a retreat center.
It is.
We'll hear more about that in a little bit. They teach and work at the SJ Catholic. What does SJ stand for? St. Joseph Catholic School. And the host of the Heartlines podcast, all of which we'll talk more about in a minute here. But when we get back to your story, when we left off, you know, through so many relationships and connections and chance meetings and providential encounters,
yeah.
You've led up to this point where you've made the decision. You guys are going to become Catholic and you're pursuing a youth ministry job, and that seems to be working out. So let's pick it up there and what happened next.
Yeah, kind of anticlimactic.
Well, how about the story of how we've I always like to tell the story because, you know, we're poor, we're struggling, and just really how God has taken such good care of us through this. Like, so we decided to move from our small, very WASPy Presbyterian town into the big city of Pittsburgh to take this youth ministry job. And we have our third baby at this point. Yeah. And we, I guess this is right after we became Catholic.
Okay.
So we can go back. You want to tell about how we became Catholic?
Yeah, I mean, before that, we entered the church,
and we did not
St. Mary's.
Yeah, we did not go through any RCIA,
no,
program. RCIA. They, like, heard our... We had some conversations with these pastors. Sure. Like, you guys know the faith pretty well after reading.
Yeah, they were kind, welcoming men who said, yeah, you're ready. And so on May 13th, Fatima...
May 13th, which we did not know.
We didn't know what Fatima was.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And with our best friends, we came. The Fosters came into the church at the same time, and the Hans sponsored
the Hans
us.
Sponsors,
Wow, nice.
Yeah, and it was preceded by First Confession,
and we were very pregnant at the time because the dear father was so worried we were going to have the baby. I'm like, no, it's okay.
We came in the 13th. The baby was Emily was born on the 24th.
Yeah. Wow,
we had time.
Yeah.
It was fine.
But we moved into the city. Yeah. And I, so this drug federal case that I was on, right? When we went to look for houses, I recognized the names of the streets, right?
These because these are drug
Because they
streets.
Were the names of the streets in the trial.
Oh, boy.
Like, yeah, I know that street. And I'm like, oh, great. And we went through some apartments that we could afford. Yeah. And, you know, there's like five locks on the door. And I stood in one of them. And, you know, and it just
looks
filthy to me with my three little babies. Mm-hmm. And I just cried.
She's crying. I felt
just like,
so bad.
I cannot bring my children into this place here. And then we went back to talk to one of the pastors at the church
Father
where
Joe,
we were working.
May he rest in peace.
And we're like, you know, we're trying to find a place to stay. And he's like, oh, well, the convents, the sisters are losing sisters at this time. And so there's a convent that's empty. Y'all can stay there.
So we had this beautiful house.
Yeah, a block from the one of the churches.
So we could walk to
at.
Daily Mass.
Right.
And it was, and the associate pastor there, the parochial vicar, was so kind. He's a friend to this day. He's a retired priest from Pittsburgh. So
and in a neighborhood that is mostly policemen. Yeah, that's what they tell us. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it was just good. So
wow.
And our friends introduced us to Opus Dei, and there's a vibrant Opus Dei community in Pittsburgh, and those men and women are friends to this day.
For those who aren't familiar, what's Opus Dei?
It's a movement in the church.
Yeah, stands
Saint
for the work of God.
Escriva, and that formed us.
Yeah, yes, continued our formation.
Yeah, pretty significantly, and that group of people, right, with some other tangents, decided that they wanted to start a Catholic school. Mm-hmm. An independent Catholic school that would have kind of the charism of Opus Dei, and asked me to be on the board because I was working for the diocese, so there was a diocesan connection. And they started the school. It opened with 13 students, and during the first year of the school, they didn't have a headmaster. I was 31 years old. The priest at the time, Father Rocky, Father Frank, stopped me after daily mass one day and said, why don't you do something important with your life? Give up the youth ministry thing and become head of school.
And you were happy to do that because youth ministry did not pay great at that time
in
the church.
By that time, we'd moved out to a parish in North Hills.
And having child number five, six. Yeah.
So again, just another... Right. What did I know about being head of school? Not a lot, right? I'm still learning right after 30 years of doing it.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
We had this beautiful little school, and I had the opportunity to work at that school. And so that was our life.
Yeah.
And we continued to have babies.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was feeling restless. What's God calling me to? I was working for my friends, and I was the younger friend.
And the school was mostly younger kids, mostly elementary
school. I had a heart for high school kids, and coming out of Young Life, I had a heart for unchurched kids.
Sure.
Right? That mattered a lot to me. I have an evangelical spirit and desire. And so I started praying to St. Joseph. You're talking about the saints earlier. And just he had not been somebody I'd been devoted to, and I started praying to him because I'd heard, you know, he takes care of fathers and families. And I got in the mail a letter from a headhunter from St. Joseph's Catholic School, or it was St. Joseph's High School at the time in Greenville.
Greenville, South Carolina.
South Carolina, yeah. Right. And it was dated March 19th, right? I threw it in the trash. We had done marriage prep programs, and she was down preaching or teaching one of those, right?
Couples, yeah.
And I was babysitting, and I pulled the letter back out. There was something that said, make this phone call, and I made the phone call while she was away, and one thing led to another, and one of the board members had a daughter that was at Steubenville, and so in like 2 months' time span, we were on our way to Greenville, South Carolina mm-hmm. to be the new head of school at this
Catholic High School.
March is St. Joseph's month, isn't it?
Yeah, March 19th is his feast day.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, March 19th.
I thought it was. Right.
It's his feast day.
Wow, yeah. That's incredible.
Yeah.
And that date will be significant for the we'll come back to that. Yeah. Hopefully we'll get to the end of that.
So that's where I've been ever since.
Okay. So yeah, you guys you moved there and you've been involved with the school since and you teach there as well?
I teach part-time there. Yeah. The school starts now in sixth grade. Mm-hmm. Originally had just been high school. And we homeschool our kids. And then when they get to middle school, they get to go to their dad's school.
Oh, yeah. That's cool.
I think what we're trying to do there is combine kind of the rich Catholic intellectual tradition with an evangelical outreach. So there's a lot of, you know, we're in the buckle of the Bible Belt, and it's been a wonderful experience the last 25 years.
Yeah. Wonderful, wonderful. Yeah. Well, let's talk about the other ministry. How did that come about?
Okay, so it's been a wonderful ministry for 25 years, but I'm going to speak of this from the wife's perspective.
Sure.
It's a little bit stressful to be a head of school. You know, you're answering to parents, to teachers, you know, taking care of students. You've got board members. Mm-hmm. And so I could see that, and myself too, I'm not going to say it was just your ministry as well, but I'm a volunteer. I'm a I'll do every ministry possible. So I'm doing all these ministries. We have, you know, 10 children at the time. And we're just really feeling the stress and just so much heavy work that we're doing, kind of forgetting our roots and trying to be a little more free with what God wants us to do. And so where we are in South Carolina, there is mountains very close by. And so we would find we love to go up to the mountains just to sort of get away a little bit. And we decide at one point we're going to buy this little trailer up in the mountains. So we buy this little trailer and it's on a creek. And we would find that we would go there just to sort of to get away. We would communicate better. So it was great for our marriage. We would spend time praying. There's no internet or computers or anything there. So we would read and study again and sort of get back to our roots of, and just breathing again. Mm-hmm. I think just breathing again. And so we would go there as sort of a rest and a retreat. And we really felt on our hearts that we want to share this with other people. We want to, like, have other people experience this. So many people live these busy lives. We don't communicate with each other anymore.
Like I know a lot of people know about Catholic Family Land, right?
Yeah.
But there's also the Marianists have run a family retreat for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we had friends from Greenville, South Carolina, who invited us to go to one. And we went reluctantly. It was at the beach in North Carolina.
Wasn't that reluctantly? Because it wasn't the
beach. Well, it was at the beach, right? I'll go because it was at the beach. And we had a great experience there, right? Yeah. It was very simple, like vacation Bible school for the whole family. But we saw that we could talk to our kids more freely about the faith and they could talk to us. And we did that three times. Yeah. And what it opened for, like, it opened a latent desire for us to maybe want to offer that too. And so we went on a 2-year search for property.
Wow. So we could combine those things. We just felt really called to bring people back to nature, mm-hmm. give people opportunities to get away and communicate.
Yeah.
Well, and offer these family camps. Yeah.
Right. Well, and that has a long tradition in the church of this concept of pilgrimage, this concept of retreat as a spiritual discipline that there needs, like Christ himself. He went and spent that time out in the wilderness just to be with God. we kind of need that. And that, like you said, in the modern world, we need it even more, but we have an even harder time seeing the value of it. But there has to be, it's an important spiritual discipline that we take times out of the day, out of the week, out of the year, to step aside from the normal, to reconnect with God in a deeper way.
And we were seeing how that little cabin was changing us.
Right.
And then and the time we spent with our family. Right. Couples need that, right?
Yeah,
and then, so we... sought St. Joseph again, right?
Yeah, for 2 years we drug a realtor around looking at
everywhere,
all these
North
properties.
Carolina mountains,
run
camps, farms.
Couldn't afford a lot, right? Mm-hmm. But we've been blessed over time with the school, and we had some resources, and we bought a place. And we bought it and signed on the place on March 20th, it was supposed to be the 19th.
Supposed to be 19th.
Contract dated on the 19th.
Right.
And we didn't make that happen.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, Joseph, I had this little men's prayer book. It's like this little big, and it's tattered, and I've had it the whole time we've been Catholic. And there's a little prayer in there about for a father to provide for his family.
Yeah.
And I would just pray this prayer over and over again. And I have just watched Joseph answer that prayer throughout my entire life.
Right? Yeah.
And he did. We bought the property. There's a picture of us. We're really happy, but behind the smile was a lot of nervousness.
Right. And the reason it wasn't on the 19th, like it was supposed to be, was because this was in the year of 2020, in March.
Okay.
Right. So if you remember, in March, everybody is panicking, and everything's closing down, and nobody knows what to do, and the real estate agent's like, you know, I don't know if we can meet today. And we're like, okay, fine, but please let's do it tomorrow. But so we had that, we bought a, you know, retreat center right at the start of COVID. But for us, it was a 37 blessing.
37 acres, 5 acre lake, 12
buildings.
It had a gym, it had a cafeteria.
It's beautiful.
It was a gift. It was just, and it was a fire sale because the people who had owned it had to get rid of it.
And it had been abandoned for the longest time. And I've got to tell this other story too, because I love this story so much. Like, we would go to the property, and this is in the winter, because it's, you know, in March. And every time we would go, there would be like a new building we'd discover. Oh, I didn't know that building was there, or I didn't know this room was here. And the power had been off. Mm-hmm. So it's just very dark, and not being super prepared as we are, we're just using our little phones as flashlights. And we're going through the buildings, looking at all the different rooms and what they've left behind. And we open the door to this one room, and it startled me. I'm like, it looked like a man was standing there. All right. And so when we looked closer, it was a statue. And guess who it was a statue of?
At this former Baptist.
At a former Baptist home. It was St. Joseph.
For real?
St. Joseph.
Oh, my goodness.
A decent-sized statue of St. Joseph, which is bizarre, but apparently it was part of a nativity set that they had, but it was just this random junk and this man. So
that's so funny.
Yeah.
Well, it goes back, again, something that you guys mentioned earlier and we touched on a little bit, which is just that this is God delights in working in these ways, right? In his fatherly heart, he's working through his saints, working through relationships, other people. Surely that's kind of plays into, and part of the ministry here is this hospitality. Talk about the importance of hospitality as a work of mercy, as a service. Yeah.
Do you want to talk about that?
No. I think you should. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So currently, my husband's very happy working as the head of school still. And we eventually will retire and do this full time. But for me now, it's kind of my full time job. And I'm trying to be the director of this retreat center. And just out of a lot of prayer and discern, we've come to this idea of Catholic hospitality, that this is the mission that God has put on our hearts. And in particular, it is the mission of the Sacred Heart of Jesus. So we had the name Heart Ridge originally before we even found the property, because we really felt like, you know, we want to search our hearts and do what our hearts are desiring. The whole idea of St. Augustine, and that our hearts are restless till they rest in God. And so we love that whole image. And then we've just recently felt called to the Sacred Heart of Jesus as well. And with the Pope's new encyclical that has just come out about the Sacred Heart, we're just seeing this whole heart of Christ. And we just want to share that love of Christ that's in his heart with other people, which is hospitality, really. Yeah. Yeah. It's just seeing people where they are, taking care of people. And we want our retreat center to be like that because we felt so accompanied as we were coming into the church. People taking notice of us, people helping us out. And we've seen wonderful things at our retreat center, too. Like, so we are in the Bible Belt, a lot of Baptist churches around us. And we have a lot of other denominations who use our retreat center. Mm-hmm. So they come with their groups. You know, they see that image of the Sacred Heart. So they've got to question that. We've got crucifix. We've got this wonderful library. But most of all, we want to influence them because we want to just share the love of Christ. We want to treat them like Christ would treat them. Right. Like, we want to look them in the eye, tell them we care about them. We want to make them very comfortable there. We try mm-hmm. to serve them as the best that we can. And and it's great.
So we run our own programs there. We run a family camp in the summer, and this will be our fifth summer of that, and have developed great relationships because the families keep coming back. And then we'll do a men's retreat, a women's retreat, a father-son, mother-daughter retreat, and, you know, kind of set things that we do there. But mostly on the weekends, we're in the kitchen.
We're the cooking staff.
We cook, right? She's the head cook, and I'm the sous chef, and we enjoy that, and we just try to take care of the people who are there. But you have a lot of across-the-counter conversations with who's ever there, and we just want to be the love of Christ to the people who are who are there. And it's a beautiful spot, and people leave happy, and we're working a lot. But the work is different from my work at St. Joseph's, so much so that I go back from a weekend in the kitchen energized to be back in school. And
something you said that I connect with a lot, I've always loved the Sacred Heart devotion and the image as a reminder that, again, how we see salvation as Catholics is, again, not just like a legal imputation, not just God kind of ignoring our sins, but that He actually wants to forgive us. He actually wants to heal us. He actually wants to help us grow up and be like Him. And so what does it mean to be like Christ? Well, we want to, ultimately, we want to think like Him. We want to act like Him. But even in our hearts,
right?
When when He looked at the rich young ruler and loved him, or when He saw those little children, or we looked with compassion on the women at the well, or we want to have a heart like that.
That's right.
And so that's a, I always think of that with the Sacred Heart, that I want to imitate Christ's heart ultimately.
That's right.
I was thinking about how do you tell your conversion story? It doesn't stop when you come into the church. It's not like our story is continuing because He wants more of me, and He wants me to trust Him more.
And become more and more like Him.
Yeah, becoming Catholic's just the starting gun. The rest of it.
I had somebody used to work with me who would say, "You're not Catholic yet. You're Catholic, but you don't think like a Catholic." You know, and he was right. He's absolutely right. You know, so thank God for the church.
Yeah.
You know,
we've got about 6 minutes left, and so just a few more things. I want to hear about the podcast, and then a couple things we'll circle back around on in terms of those who may be listening and how we can encourage them. But tell us about the podcast, Heartlines. Is that another Sacred Heart reference
Tell them the Heartlines story.
Okay.
So the name. Okay, let me say something about the name. Because when you drive into our retreat center property, there is a beautiful view, right? So you're coming from Greenville. It's about an hour outside of Greenville. And you're just kind of ascending the whole way that you're there. And right when you get there, there's a beautiful view of the Blue Ridge Mountains. Yeah. It's gorgeous.
Oh, wow.
But it's obstructed by power lines, right? So there are power lines there, and there are a couple different things about that we love, right? So for one thing, because people always say, that's a beautiful view,
but you have those power lines. Right?
Okay. Yeah, this ugly thing.
Yeah.
And a friend of ours who worked with us for a couple summers now has said, but if it weren't for those ugly things, maybe we wouldn't see the beauty too, right? And that is true in this case because we wouldn't see them if the power company hadn't mowed down all the trees.
Because you would just see trees, right? You wouldn't see them out.
There'd be no abuse. So there's that aspect of it. And then lines connect people. And we are reluctant podcasters, right? We love listening to them, right? But we decided after asking, having people ask us, how can we stay connected with you and with Hartridge? And so we've reluctantly started
this podcast.
We
have these wonderful conversations.
That's a great idea.
Over the cafeteria counter and the retreats that we lead, you know, we'll sit in a circle with the people and share our lives with them. And especially the family camp. In the family camp, we have an opportunity for just the parents to meet together. And we lead these parent groups and such wonderful, fruitful discussions that we have. And the parents want more. So and they want to be reminded of all these wonderful things that they talk about. So that's what the podcast is going to attempt to
connect us.
Yeah. And we're having fun doing it.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right. Well, with our remaining, you know, 5 or so minutes, what's on my heart to ask you is, again, I'm very touched by your story, both on your journey to becoming, well, even before that, right, coming to kind of grow up in your faith and being moved towards ministry and then being led to the Catholic Church, and now even the continuing journey growing to be able to Christ. You guys have done this together as a couple, right?
Yeah.
And there are many couples that, you know, one or the other, you know, they're on a spiritual journey, but doing that in tandem, doing that so that it brings us close together, that's a challenge. For a couple out there who's, again, on one or more of these spiritual journeys, what is some advice you might give them to walking that journey together in a way that draws you together and builds up the marriage rather than being a source of tension?
It can be a source of tension, though, too, right?
Yeah.
It's just that I think the beauty of understanding that we're just so different and that God is going to use those differences so together we can journey and help each other out. For me, that's just very helpful to realize that he's just very different from me. He's going to see things differently. Different things are going to be important to him. But if I look through his eyes, I can benefit from what he has to offer and understand things a little bit deeper.
Yeah, I can't imagine my life or ministry without her. You know? And coming home and talking through what happened at school or even talking about the next retreat that we're going to do, it's just a great blessing, right, to see our Lord. Like, you think about what marriage is, right? And it's a sacrament, right? And my wife is this living, breathing sign of Christ. And what a gift that is in life. And ministry is kind of the overflow of that, I think, for us.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it gets back to this sacramental worldview that we've sort of touched on in terms of God chooses to work through people. And so that can kind of help to color how we, whenever we're in a difficult situation, right, on a part of a journey, always expecting, like, God has put people in my life for a reason. He's given me this marriage for a reason, right? And so even when it's difficult, like, God is going to speak through this person, through this.
Yeah.
This is an opportunity for the relationship. Right. Like, always seeing the opportunity, seeing the grace at work there. I think it's part of being able to receive it rightly.
That's right.
That's good. Yeah. Keith, for pastors out there or men who are preparing for that, who are feeling this call, a word of encouragement to them, you know, as they consider this
pray. Pray. You know, I can't imagine life without prayer and trust. You know, I think sometimes we think we have to do it ourselves as men, especially, right? And we do need to do a lot of things. I've worked very hard in my life and would do anything for my family. But like, if I had a do-over, I wish I had the trust now or then that I have now.
Yeah.
Right. Because I can look and see how God has, his thread is the whole way through it. Right. You trust yourself to him. He's got this and, you know, pray, hope, and don't worry. As Padre Pio said, I just think there'll be suffering and difficulty along the way, but that's all part of a beautiful journey.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you both so much for sharing your stories and for your ministry. I want to make sure that we have those URLs up there. Again, if people want to know more about the St. Joseph's School, it's sjcatholicschool.org. More about the Retreat Center, that great ministry there, heartridgeministries.com. And probably the Heartlines podcast is a good place to get to know you two better and hear more about that ministry. Yeah. So encourage people to check that out.
Thank you guys
for being here. And again, thank you for joining us for this episode of the Journey Home program. I pray that Keith and Tammy's story was an inspiration to you and to continue your own journey. Again, as Keith was saying there, we have to just persevere in prayer and trust that God will make a way forward, that he has a plan, that he has a next step he wants to, us to take. And so we every day that should be our prayer. Lord, what is your will today? What's the next step I can take? I also wanted to mention, again, part of Keith's and Tammy's story was this situation that we're familiar with at the Coming Home Network, where many times a pastor and his wife are drawn home to the Catholic Church, and that's a difficult process. Again, and we need, as they said, we need friends, we need connections, we need hospitality as part of that process. And so if you're on a similar journey to that, please reach out to us at the Coming Home Network. The core of our mission is to, especially to help pastors and ministers who are coming home to the Catholic Church, to encourage them and to pray with and for them on their journey. So check that out at chnetwork.org. But in the meantime, we'll be back next week with another conversion story. God bless.